Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Our host, Oscar Endermo, will together with guests share proven, tested strategies for improving your life and business. At the end of each episode, you will learn how you can use technology to implement those strategies into your daily life. We want to help you bridge the gap from inspiration to implementation.
Welcome to another episode of the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. In this episode, I sit down with Kjell Lindström, who is one of the top futurists and trend spotters in Sweden. And he is especially knowledgeable when it comes to HR, leadership, and organizations. So in this episode, we discuss the world post-corona. We talk about Zoom fatigue, and we talk about the challenge of managing organizations when everyone is working from home. And yeah, a lot of other things about the future, trend spotting, and what happened now in the world with Corona. So this is a really interesting episode that I'm sure you will learn a lot from. So here we go, me and Kjell. So Kjell, welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I reached out to you because you have a very interesting background and interesting field that you're working with.
Yes, thank you.
And I like to start with this question that I always start with, and that is, if you, me, and a third guy, we were standing in an elevator in Dubai and we were going up in a tall building, and the third guy, he asked, so Kjell, what do you do? What would you reply to him?
Well, I would say I work with business intelligence or trend spotting, and try to point out to people in organization how that will affect them. That's the short answer, actually.
So since I'm in the lift as well, I will add that Kjell has written seven books about these topics, and he's one of the top trend spotters in Sweden. He's a speaker, educator, and an author, and has been working with this for a long time, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. I add this because Swedish people tend to be humble, so I always need to add a little bit bragging, you know.
Thank you for that. Thank you very much.
So, trend spotting is really interesting, but how do you become a trend spotter? What's your background? How did you get into this?
My background is as follows. I started to both study and later work at the Department of Education at Uppsala University. And as a part of the department's fields was grown-up people's learning in organizations. So I was not into kids because they work with that, but I was into grown-up people, adult people in organizations. And what happened quite quickly is that you sort of realize that learning is depending on the context. It's depending on what kind of organization you're in. And after a while, I moved from discussing learning principles and pedagogics into more the contextual thing. How do organization affects learning? Because quite quick, and I think that this has to do with mental training as well, that when you talk about learning, it's quite often that you think it's learning is something positive. You learn and grow as a person. But in organization, it could be negative learning. You learn that you're not worth anything. It doesn't matter what you do, and so on. So the learning could be either way, depending on what kind of organization you have. And all this led to that I became a teacher and also made some research on organization and organization change. And since then, all these books I've written is about organization and what kind of context do they sort of give, for example, for HR, for leaders, for management teams, and so forth. And in the beginning of my career, I went from the university to an organization which is situated here in Uppsala still. And our interest at that time were what's happening outside an organization that affects the organization. So we work with, the little brother of SWOT analysis is PEST analysis, what's happening politically, economically, social, and technology in the technological field that can affect organizations. And after a couple of years, that led to that I started an email that I still work with. So every week I send out about 4,000 emails that I try to find signals in different kind of sources that has to do with organization, leadership, HR, and so on. Mm. And when you see this or listen to this pod, I'm about to prepare for my 465th email. So I've been doing this for 465 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And if you combine this, what's happening out there with some basic organization questions as power and so on, it's a quite an interesting field to sort of see what's happened and what's not happening. Yeah. So that's...
Yeah. I saw that that email got some award from one of the biggest leadership magazines in Sweden, no? 2000.
Oh, yes, that was really nice. They had a list of 10, I think, and we were ahead of their own.
Yeah, that's
so their own. Uh-huh. It was number two, and this was number one. So I think it's quite appreciated. And
I just signed up this morning. So I haven't had it before. So I look forward to the next coming Friday where I will get the first one.
It's for free. So,
exactly.
If you want some trend spotting out in the world, so just join in.
It's currently in Swedish only, right?
The main part of the articles is in English, but there's so you can, they're translated, but if you see something, you can see if it's, for example, a Harvard Business Review, you just click on the link and then you end up in Harvard Business Review.
Excellent. Yeah. So for, we have a lot of listeners in Sweden and they can go to, I'll put the link in the show notes to this, but also for the international listeners.
So
you have a long background in transporting.
yes, it's getting longer and longer, I think.
I spoke to another guy that is also one of the leading transporters in Sweden, Carrier's Future, and Mats. In November 2019, we had a very interesting conversation that is also on this podcast. And for the listeners, I recommend you to listen to. And in November of 2019, there was nothing about something that happened in 2020.
No, I think we've all missed that.
Something big happened in 2020. Corona has, of course, changed everything. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this because... how do you see the world now? As we're recording this, the vaccine is starting to be implemented around the world. But
yes.
How has COVID affected all this transporting of food?
where do spring we start? 2020, it was the only trends you found was around COVID-19. But that, I think it's getting a bit more normal now. But what happened was, of course, that what you have been talking about for at least 10 years or 15 years, the digital impact on organization, suddenly, at least when it came to meetings, it sort of suddenly came into to the society and people started to work from home in a way they haven't done before. And and that creates a lot of new interesting leadership and management and HR problems, which I think we haven't really started to work on with the idea that this will go on forever. Mm. I think that people have been coping this year, and we'll see what happens if this ever ends.
Have you looked at any of the effects that, because Sweden shows a different path than most of the European countries. Sweden has, when we came back to Sweden in July last year, we were shocked to see that you could do whatever you want. There was no face masks and very open compared to Dubai, where we were in a very strict lockdown. Have you seen any effects on Sweden compared to the rest of Europe when it comes to like the economy and all this?
What they do discuss is the impact of, or effects of the lockdown, because we haven't locked down and it's not good in Sweden, but it's worse on other places. And of course, there's discussion that perhaps there is other factors in sort of affecting how many people get sick and how many people dies and so. I think this has to be reviewed in a couple of years, what really happened around this area.
Because I guess we can also learn from it for the future, because I think more pandemics will happen in the future. So
absolutely, absolutely.
We need to analyze. I mean, from my perspective, I'm a small business owner. I like the Swedish approach, but of course, if you work in a hospital, maybe not so much. So, but I think we need to look at the bigger picture. But
yeah, so because so now you, I think we're into two of the big mega trends when it comes to organization, which is sort of one is the digital impact, and the other one is disruption. That this pandemic is a disruption. It's something, a game changer. And if you think ahead or think backwards, we have had these kind of game changers in the economic field when the bubble in 2000 sort of changed a lot of and so on. And in the future, we'll have more pandemics, perhaps even worse than this one. And they also have the climate area. So, of course, there is an interesting question for organizations to prepare for an uncertain future in a way that sort of makes it much more difficult to work with the global supply chains and so on, because that's quite unsafe in that kind of environment. And you can see that already some organizations are sort of putting their production not in the Philippines or in China, they bring it back to their own country. It doesn't necessarily means more jobs in the home country because they put robots there instead.
But
it's a way of sort of secure the organization. So I think that both the digital effects, but also the fear of next disruption will affect organizations.
So from the HR perspective, people suddenly start work, those that can work from home. I mean, even though we don't have a lockdown in Sweden, everyone works from home basically that can in Sweden. And how does that change management and leadership? Do you...
Well, I think that there's two questions. The one question is what happens now, and the other question is what happens afterwards. And I think that some might call this the fifth industrial revolution, is that people in the sort of knowledge or office area sort of start working from home. This is so completely different, and it puts a lot of demand on things that we have taken for granted, for example, legislation or just the idea of leadership, how to perform leadership when you don't have people in the same room and so on. And it has a lot of interesting effects. For example, the size. It's interesting that a lot of the big leaders are tall. Either they are small or they are tall. And if you look at the screen, that sort of disappears. You cannot see that Sylvester Stallone is 1.58 centimeters tall. He's a small guy, but you can see that. So this classic thing for leadership, size, it sort of disappears. And another time,
the tall CEOs that dominate.
Yes, they get in trouble here. And also, it gets another effect on dominating the room. So what happens, there's a researcher in Karlstad, which you also perhaps should have a conversation with. Her name is Lena Lid Falkman, who's been studying this. So talking about the gender dimension, that what gets interesting is what people do. Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's get more and more of a meritocracy that if you do what we have sort of agreed on, you get a higher status, and if you don't, and her idea is that a lot of guys is just floating around, and they also get in trouble in this kind of environment. So
because you cannot talk, you cannot bullshit your way out.
Yeah, no, I can't. You just being cool. That's way it's not the success factor.
Yeah, I have a friend in Dubai that was. She's really an introvert. So she gets energy by being alone, you know, and she gets really tired going to the office. So when there was the lockdown and she had to work from home, she was very happy.
Yes, yes.
So I had this conspiracy theory that the pandemic was caused by the introverts. I want to go to the office. Yeah. But I think for an introvert, it can be good because, like you're saying, sometimes they fall behind because the people that talks are the loudest. They get the promotions. They get all this because they are the ones that you can hear. But the result maybe is better from the introverts.
So. Yeah, yeah. So I think this is more like short-term effects on this, because the interesting thing, it's now it's getting complex because there's a lot of questions at the same time.
Yeah.
This was a shock, of course, in March. People were sent home, and Sweden, we have high levels of trust, they say. So you trust people working from home. We also have high levels of technology. So a lot of people, most people have broadband and computers and stuff. So we are sort of prepared for this. And now we also have the situation that the government, it's not a law, but the government wants us to work from home. It's interesting. Now we have seen this for about a year. So you have this Zoom fatigue and so on. The interesting thing is what happened when the government don't tell you that you have to work from home. And I know that there is some companies like Spotify and Google, they say, stay home, don't come here.
Spotify recently announced it, no?
Work from anywhere you want. But I think this is a bit more complicated than that, if you look at the fields of organization, because you have to put in two phenomenons. One is uncertainty, and the other one is power and control. So if people start working from home, the uncertainty at the management level rises. And then one way of handling your uncertainty or anxiety is to trust. The other way is to structure or control.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we will see when the pandemic sort of, if it gets lighter or if it goes away, is that some organizations are not that happy to see people working from home because they can't control them in the way that you want to. And it's also the changes, the power structures. So I think that it's not that easy that all organizations want people to work from home. Some organizations like that, but some do not like it at all. And the next step is the individual. So for example, if you have a very good place, you work in a really nice organization, and your home is a mess, you would probably prefer to go to the organization work. Even if it's a journey, you have to go there, takes an hour to get there. There is a lot of organizations that are not that pleasant. So if you have a really good place at home to work, and the organization is just a mess of structures and people checking you and blah, 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 then you probably want to work it from home. So now we are talking about the hybrid organization. It's not just people working from home or not just people working at the office. We have the mix. I think that mix, if you look at the organization at all, will be very complex. It will be really different solutions in different organizations and different branches. And that, of course, is extremely interesting if you're interested in the future of organization.
So successful organizations, they create a good culture, no? A good culture in the workspace. So how can you create a good culture when over Zoom?
Yes,
it's
a really good. I think that the answer, what I've found so far, is if you have a good culture, it's probably possible to maintain it. But it's very difficult to create it. Which means that there's two questions. Do you have a good culture? You can sort of maintain it by working in a professional way with Zoom. But it's culture is depending on trust. And that's difficult when you don't actually meet people. We are not that complicated. The human construction is not that complicated. We want to see people and hear them and feel their smell.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a friend and he said it's quite easy for us to work from home. We over Zoom, everything's fine. But for the new people, the new employees, yeah, when we hire people, and like your introduction is over a Zoom call, there's no lunch break, there's no like going for a coffee, fika, Swedish style, you know. So that's the tricky part, I find, I think. You know?
Yes, and you get into another problem, is the classic thing which I met when we were talking about flexibility, and working from home is a one dimension of flexibility. I met someone from the Swedish or Swiss company ABB, and they said that we don't allow people under 40 to work from home because they haven't understood what an organization is. They don't know what they are away from. Uh-huh. So we want younger people to be at the workplace to sort of understand the cultures and what's the demands are. When they have understood that, we can send them home. And I think I read a from the Swedish journal Arbetsliv, which is looking at both psychological and the environmental stuff, that there was two kind of problem. The older people had problems with the technology, and the younger people had problems not with the technology because they were used to it, but they had problems because they hadn't have anyone to ask. They didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a bit surprising for everyone who thought that all the youngsters, they will love this. Mm-hmm. But it's not true because they have uncertainties as well. Mm-hmm. So they probably want to be there at work and ask people and show me how to do this and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And that could be quite complicated through Zoom and Teams, I think.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess, I mean, I don't know if ABB implemented this now, but if you're below 40, the risk of COVID is much, much less because yes, COVID seems to affect the older people. No? So
yes, yes. So yeah. So that's interesting.
So you say trust and power are these the two variables that...
Trust or control is more.
Trust or control, yeah.
Trust and control.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it seems like trust is the way in future organizations.
Yeah.
Or are there any successful organizations that are still using control?
I have to show you something. Hang in there. Don't go away.
I drink some water.
Now I'm back.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. This thing that you point out as a question, this is the September-October issue of Harvard Business Review, prestigious. And for it's not that often that Harvard Business Review has HR matters on the front page, but this time it has, where people management went wrong. And it is quite long and interesting article. The author means that when people starts to work from home, it puts up a question that has to be discussed. And that is what's your idea of people are. And he is referring, I'm sure you heard about McGregor's theory X and theory Y. Mm,
yeah.
With theory X is people are lazy and you have to control them, whip them to work. And theory Y is more like empowerment. You trust people and you develop them, then they get a good organization. And he said that there is he is arguing that there is almost no research that said that theory SX is working. It's just an idea that engineers and economic people have, that it should work, but in reality it doesn't work. Most research says that theory Y is working. It's much more sort of, but still you have this idea that if you sort of control people hard, that's the way to get work. And see that in this article that there is the dark side is that if organizations get uncertain of what people are doing at home, today we have all the technology that is needed for a really hardcore control society. that you control wherever you go, where what you're doing on your computing, how often you breathe. It's, everything is sort of technically...
check your heart rate. What?
Yes. So in a sense, you can say that in the happy way, the good way, or the sort of positive way, is that finally we have organizations that trust people. They can work from home, they can take care of the kids and everything, and they can work when they sort of feel like, now I'm really doing good work. I would like to work in 11 o'clock in the evening. That's my best time. But on the other hand, you have the dark side, which says that if they are at home, you cannot trust them. So they have to bury them in control. That's the only way to get this to work. And I think that this will, we will see this in a year or two. What way different organizations take when it comes to how to handle people that are not in the workplace.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know which organization I much would rather work for.
Yes.
But I think it could be also a national culture thing, because in Sweden, like you said, the trust is high.
Yes.
Whereas in maybe some Asian countries, there is more of a control in the culture. But yeah, for a Swedish organization, definitely, I would not like my boss to check how I spend my time on the computer. You know, like
no,
just and I personally been working for a result-based organizations since 2009. And then it doesn't matter what you do, because it's only the result. But it's kind of different. How do you do that? How do you build in the trust in the management?
There is a whole area called empowerment that has to do with it's a lot of different activities like education and on the job training and everything. So I think this will be quite interesting to follow. And this is a market as well. Control is a market. It's easy to sell the argument for control. It's much more difficult to sell the argument for trust. So we'll see what's happening.
Interesting. So you think that there will be, after COVID, there will be a lot of hybrid solutions?
I think that will be. Yeah. And both the power from the organization, if they want to have people at the office or at home. That's one dimension. Yeah. And the other dimension is what the individuals in the organization, if they have the possibility to choose, if they choose to go to the organization. And this will give you a mix. In some organization, they will be sitting in the office. Another organization, like Google and Spotify, they won't be there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So office space, I mean, Spotify, for example, they have an office space in downtown Stockholm. And someone said that traditionally the best investment you could ever do was if you were a billionaire and buy real estate in downtown New York.
Yeah.
But now, if you don't need office space, I mean, you can work from home, the real estate will change quite a lot, no?
Oh, yes. And of course, there's a lot of discussion. If you work better from home and you go to your office 2 days a week, what would you do there? So quite a lot of discussion that the offices changes from being a workplace to be a meeting place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's better to sit at home and work. And then when you and I meet at the office, we can discuss more complex issues.
That's quite interesting, because for me, being a solo entrepreneur, I divide my to-do list with things when I'm productive versus creative. And I have different workspaces. When I'm productive, I'd sit in a special way, and when I need to be creative, either I sit in a different way or I go to a coffee shop or somewhere where and I guess it could be the same thing, like the brainstorming sessions are done in the office, but when you need to be productive, you can sit wherever you want.
And of course this gets a lot of effect on office areas and how you will design them and so on. Activity-based offices, I think that's a trend that will probably go on, because what kind of meeting would you like to have in real life?
Yeah.
that this gives you any more quality than meeting like this.
Yeah. So another thing that you mentioned was that you started your work with learning organizations, I think, in the 90s or and I think this is more important than ever because of the rapid change. And, and personally, I love to learn, but not everyone loves to learn. So how do you build a learning organization?
Yeah, that's I think that's the Nobel Prize question.
You have to read your 7 books that you've written.
They are not very much into learning organization. But learning has some difficulties. Of course, it's knowledge or competence is easy to carry, as we say. But learning could be quite painful. So I think that that's why it's difficult for some people to learn, because it's demanding, and you also have to get out of your comfort zone, and you have to be sort of certain that it's worth anything. But when it comes to learning organization, you have a next level of problem. The first problem is, of course, if you, Oscar, you learn something. So that's good. The next thing is, how do you transfer that knowledge to, for example, your team? Mm. You have any arenas for discussing, I learned something new, how can we use this in so, and or to transfer it to the organization. And learning organization means that you change your routines because someone has learned something. So you can understand that's a problem in itself. So change because of learning. And next thing is that you can offer the surrounding world something new because you've learned something. And these gaps between, so I think there's a learning organization in that sense that the individuals learn a lot, but the organization doesn't change.
And then the individual leaves.
The individual leaves, starts an own company.
Exactly.
And work from there. So learning organization, it's people that learn, not organization. But if you want to talk about learning organization, in some sense, is the capacity or ability to change structures and routines according to new knowledge. Mm. And so I actually think that in some organizations, you learn a lot on the individual level. But when you leave the organization, it's the same as when you came in. I think that's the problem with the idea of learning organization. And if we come back to the issue of power, Gareth Morgan wrote a book in the 1990s called Images of Organization. He was discussing these different ideas of organization, and one of them was learning, the idea of organization as a brain or information processing. So, and one problem with the idea of learning at the workplace is power. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. So if people on the bottom level, if you just say, start to learn things, they get new ideas and they get new demands and you get perhaps newer initiatives. This puts a pressure on the power structure. They have to be prepared to handle this. Mm-hmm. So Morgan's conclusion was that a lot of ideas around learning and learning in organization have been too blue-eyed, and they haven't actually dealt with the problem with power in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then what you do, of course, is you leave. So the good people leave when they learn enough and the organization don't listen, they leave.
It needs to be on all levels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I told you my mother worked with arbetsglädje, we call it in Swedish, happiness at work or joy at work or whatever it's in English. And one of the things that they did in the 80s and the 90s was that they did projects where the frontline staff, they did in hospitals, for example, the nurses that were closest to the patients, they asked them, what would you do to improve this hospital? So instead of the coming top down, it came from the people that actually work with the patients. But she always said, in order to do that, you really had to have a secure boss that is okay with this, because they normally, I'm supposed to come with ideas, and suddenly the ideas come from the other way around. So
it's a good illustration of this thing I was talking about, that it could put a learning puts up quite a lot of pressure on the organization. It has to be sort of prepared for that. And in the 1990s, we'll see what's happened now around the idea of learning and learning an organization. Because in the 1990s, when it really was a fashion, a lot of organizations started projects on learning organization. And I would say quite a lot of them failed because they didn't prepare enough or didn't discuss with the management hierarchy what this is going to change things, and you have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, because the ego comes in place. You know? So, yeah. It needs to be on all levels, I guess, accepted. Education. I mean, you have a background in education, but okay, it was more education in organizations. But I know you also worked in Uppsala University and the School of Economics in Stockholm. No, you
were work with them, not in it.
You work with them. Yeah. So when everything's changing so fast, what's going to happen with education? Because,
well, that's an interesting question. Of course, what we see now is the forms for education is that you can work. I have two kids that study at universities. They both sit at home. Of course, that's the format. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of the social sciences.
Social science, yeah.
Yeah, we'll go back to more like from being know exactly what to do when you come to an organization to more have a more general idea of how everything is connected and being able to make good questions and also be able to learn. So I think it's when it gets too complex, at least the university cannot handle that. But what can they handle? Well, they can educate people to be able to think. And I think that I wouldn't be that surprised. And then what you need, the knowledge you need for work in separate organizations, I would think there will be an enormous market for e-courses and
absolutely. Your longer university education will be more general, but then specific knowledge will be shorter.
Yes, and online, of course. I would think that's one way to go on.
No, but it makes sense because I met someone the other 2 years ago. He was studying. We did an event, and he helped us with the event. And he was just graduating to become a chartered accountant in Dubai. And that night, I Googled what is the chance that AI will replace a chartered accountant. And it was like 95% chance that so he studied for 4 years, and probably his Indian parents had saved up money for his whole life so he could get an education. And when he's done, in a few years' time, it won't be needed.
Yeah. So, I read some of this is interesting. I read somewhere in some of the sort of futuristic articles that there was ideas to have exams that were like projects. Exams that you have an engineering exam and it's okay for 5 years because then it's sort of you're not an engineer for your whole life. You're an engineer for 5 years and then you have to go back to school again. So that's an interesting thought for especially for us that sort of 5 years at Uppsala University and just the thought of going back there.
One of my best friends, he's an engineer from Lund's University. He's in this like similar age as me, so he's in his 40s. And last year he decided he wanted to learn AI and machine learning, like programming. And of course, from his university, there was nothing about that. But then he took a couple of courses in this, like short, like you're saying, online courses. And now he actually works with it. So I guess those short certifications will is what people will need to do.
But another thing, if you talk about the university, that's sort of the place I know. It's really interesting to see how much do the actual place means. So for example, do you want to study at Cambridge? Or do you want to study at at some high school out in the forest that no one heard of? So I think that Stanford and Cambridge and all this, they will be still attractive to go there, just to be there. And of course, Uppsala is a nice place to study as well, and it shapes you in a sense. But we'll see. There's a lot of discussion now that perhaps the university sites is going out of business. Everything is online.
Exactly.
And I would say that is a mistake.
Because the social aspect of being
absolutely, absolutely. I think that and I think this, when you talk about learning and digitalization, you overestimate the value of information transformation, and you underestimate the culture report. And that's what's happening. That's what happens in organization when they think that you should work, everyone should work from home. There's a cultural dimension that is really important. And of course, it's one thing to have been sitting at home studying at Cambridge, another thing to be there for 4 years and meet all the people and just be a part of it.
No, you're absolutely. I agree with you. And I studied internationally. I studied in a hotel school in Switzerland, and we had people from all over the world. And what I take with me now, like almost 20 years later, is the social aspect, getting to know people from different cultures, you know, like working together in groups, and, you know, like the actual theoretical knowledge. I mean, I don't use that much every day to day. Social aspect for sure, you know. If you pay a lot of money to attend Harvard and everything is online, it's like it doesn't make sense. If you pay a lot of money to go to Harvard, you want to be there and meet,
absolutely,
you know, build a network for the future.
Yes, and I have some colleagues. I work with the management programs that could be over a year or so, and the experience or the what comes back when I talk to my colleagues is that if you join a qualified management program top level, it doesn't matter how good everything is online. You want to meet. You would want to sit with the other people in the same situation and talk to them live. Yeah. So this has been a problem in this corona area. How do you organize that? So I think that you're underestimating, you're not, but some people underestimate the power of culture and the power of being together. So I think we'll see a lot of that when all this sort of lightens up.
So people, still need to meet and to build that culture. Interesting. Coming to the end, but one thing that I was been thinking about, for example, now, in Sweden, it seems like there's not enough truck drivers. There's not enough truck drivers today. But
yes.
10 years from now, maybe truck drivers will not be needed because they're self-driving trucks. So, I mean, where do you see the future of the workforce with the AI, robots, and automation?
I think we have a double scenario. One part is that all this enormous changes in technology, like the industrial society and so on, also creates an enormous wave of social innovation. The political parties are social innovations that sort of was an effect of the industrial society. All kinds of works and professions are social constructions to handle the new situation. So I would think that one part of the effects of the digital and technology is that you would see new professions, like influencer. Influencer is a good example.
The TikTok influencer, even newer.
So I think you just see in the beginning of that and I read in the Harvard Business Review that they are counting on the next 3 or 4 years that HR alone will have to have 21 new professions, because they're a new situation that demands new professions. So what we will see is in one sense that we're talking about workforce, that some people, for example, truck drivers, will have problems, but it will be created a lot of new kinds of professions. It's not necessarily so that the truck drivers can go to the new professions. That's a problem, of course. And the other thing is that the problem is that a lot of people will be left outside. So if you take the Swedish, you talk about Sweden being a sort of information technology heaven, it's still 10% has no computer. They are outside the digital world. So, and I think that's probably the same or more in other countries. So they, if you have a working market built on the idea that you must use some kind of technology, people who are extremely uninterested or unwilling to learn or unable, or they will have problems. So so, and I've seen some count on unemployment levels of 15 to 20%. So you will have some people with nice jobs, but you have a lot of people outside the, and as you know, especially if you are from Sweden, if you have a lot of people outside the workforce that have social problems, everyone gets a problem. Everyone. So it puts a lot of demand on what to do with this problem. So I think that one way is more and different kinds of jobs, and one that we probably have to deal with people not being able to enter the labor market.
That's... Yeah, I recently checked the number of internet connections in the world, and it's now it's 60% January 2021, 60% have access to internet. So that means 40% doesn't even have access to internet.
No.
And how are they going to work for Spotify?
And you never talk about them.
Yeah.
They sort of take it for granted that everyone is on TikTok.
No, but this is one thing that I'm worried about. This gaps between the rich and the poor will be even greater. Yeah. And yeah, I think we need to have solutions for this. But that's maybe something we can work on somehow. I have this question that I always ask. And if you had a magic wand and you could teach something to everyone around the world, what would you teach them?
Because I have a background in the Department of Education. And I've been working with learning organization. This is a bit pathetic because that's almost where we started. But I think if we look at the future and what's coming around the corner, I think it's one thing is sort of being able to get outside your own comfort zone. That's one thing, to be prepared to try new things. And the other thing is learning to learn. And that's not just learning, but being able to sort of reflect on how you learn so you can find your way of learning. I think that will be actually really important for anyone, even us in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you. Learning how to learn is something that is extremely important in this day and age. So anything else? Thank you so much for taking the time. You want to leave with the listeners with anything else?
Well, try some trend spotting. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It happens things all the time. And if you look in newspapers and you see the daily news, they're quite dark.
Yeah.
They're quite dark. But if you look what's happening, the trends that are coming, they're much lighter. It's another world. So a lot of good things are happening if you just want to lift your views and see what's coming around
the corner. That's a very good point, actually.
Yeah?
Because when you read the headlines, it's very negative because that's what sells. You know?
Yes, absolutely. That's a logic. But even if the darkest of feel like environment, it happens so much interesting things. I actually think it might be possible that we can handle the environmental problems because there's so much happening, but you don't see very much of it in the newspapers because it's not interesting for them.
Excellent. So get interested in transporting and sign up for your newsletter.
That's the best advice I can give you.
We'll post a link in this episode so you can see. Click on that link and then you sign up. There's also in English, so for the international audience, you can also.
Yes.
And thank you. It was very nice to talk to you. And I think we can talk more about this thing. So maybe we'll do it again in a couple of months, because I also want to learn about how you work with transporting. So
yes.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
That's for next conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you. See you later. Bye.
A big thank you to Kjell, who brought his knowledge, and I think we can all learn a lot from the things that we discussed. As we talked about, you can sign up to Kjell's newsletter and get the latest trend sent straight to your inbox, and you will find the link in the description to this podcast. It's in Swedish, but most of the links are in English, so even if you don't speak Swedish, you can still find a lot of useful information in his newsletter. Also, this episode is sponsored by Trio, which is a Swedish exchange where you can buy cryptocurrencies. If you haven't listened to the episode I did with its founder and CEO, Totte, I recommend that you do that. It was, I think, episode 78. And one of the things we discussed in that episode was to do at least a small investment in Bitcoin. So if you're in Sweden, I recommend Trio. And if you use the link that is in the description to this episode, you also support the podcast. As always, if you like this show, please leave a review on iTunes, as this helps in my rankings. It's very easy to do and very fast, and it helps me a lot. So I will be very grateful if you could do that. A big thank you to someone called Hannibal that wrote on iTunes, interesting people and topics. Thank you so much for that review. I really appreciate that. So more of those. It's always nice to get those reviews. Another thing you can do is to forward this episode to a few people in your network that you think will find this interesting. So yeah, send it to a selected people in your network, and that helps me as well. And if you want to learn more about strategic tech coaching, this is a method that I developed to help you be happy and successful in a rapid changing world. And if you want to more learn about these tools, you can go to YouTube, for example, and search for strategic tech coaching. And then there's a couple of tools from the strategic tech coaching toolbox that you will find there. You can also go to strategictechcoaching.com and read more about the method. If you need a keynote speaker for your next event, you can learn more about my topics at oscarandermo.com, and that's Oscar with a K, oscarandermo.com. So thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast with your host, Oscar Andermo. We'll catch you next time.